Hello. Hi. Welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Hi. The Travel Advice Show is on traveladviceshow.com, and the phone number to call in a comment line or question line is 801-542-9330. And I'm Chris Newton, and it's June 4th, 2007. And my co-host, Jerry Fuller. How you doing, Jerry?
Very good. How are you, Chris?
Oh, doing really good. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited about the show. Today we're talking about the South Pacific Islands and Fiji there. And would you like to introduce our guest, Jerry?
Yes, we're really lucky to have Lynette Wilson back. We had her when she talked about Australia. And she is owner of Destination World, which is the company that my company and we recommend all the time for Australia. And welcome, Lynette. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for bringing me back on the show, guys. It's good to be here.
Oh, fabulous.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, thank you.
Well, we're anxious today to talk about Fiji and the South Pacific Islands, but primarily Fiji because it's such a magnificent place. And we're ready to talk about, I think, let's talk, first of all, can we do some defining? Because most people think anything in the South Pacific Island is Polynesian. And I think we should define Polynesian, Micronesian, and Melanesian just for a second so that we know what we're talking about because the cultures are so different, aren't they, Lynette?
Oh, completely. But, yeah, you are right because I get asked all the time if certain islands in Fiji are part of the French Polynesian chain, and it's two different countries. It would be like for me asking you if you're part of Canada, which would get a funny look. And it is different. People are different, et cetera. They're both lovely in their own ways, but they've both got their own different customs and cultures. And it's good to visit, you know, to visit both places over separate periods because each country has got so much to offer. It's hard to try and do four different South Pacific countries in one hit. You just want to be able to see it properly.
Right.
And Polynesia, of course, Poly means many islands. And it goes from Hawaii down to New Zealand to French Polynesia back to Hawaii, that triangle. And then the island just to the west of it, all the way from Papua New Guinea over to basically Fiji and those islands, are Micronesian and Melanesian. And Melan means black, and Nisha's islands. And so they're the people that are black, skin, much darker skin than Polynesians. And we have Micronesia, which is up in the North Pacific. But now we're going to talk about some of that. Polynesian Islands and in the South Pacific. And let's start first of all with French Polynesia because everybody's heard of Tahiti and Bora Bora and all that. What do you think of those, Lynette?
Well, French Polynesia, the first time I went to French Polynesia was about 25, 30 years ago, and it was just like the movie South Pacific. And that first sight when you go into Bora Bora does take your breath away. It's absolutely stunning. The colors and everything, they're just like the postcard.
Yeah.
Nothing fake about it. What we've noticed now over the last 20, 30 years is the fact that now that we have to pay in euro and not in CFP and the five-star hotels that have got six-star prices, it makes it a little bit... There are some budget places to go to, but the person that's used to quality packages in the US and going to places like Hawaii that's looking for the same type of property in French Polynesia will have a wonderful time as long as they don't look at their credit card bill until they get home.
I know it's probably the most expensive island chain down in the entire South Pacific is French Polynesia.
One more time, Jerome, miss what you said.
French Polynesia is probably the most expensive island chain in all of the South Pacific islands. By far.
It has been from what I found at the moment, but then again, it's probably one of the only blocks that are wanting to be, the hotels want to be paid in the euro, and the euro with the US dollar at the moment is not a pretty sight to most people. I recently had a colleague who just returned from one of the brand new five-star properties in Bora Bora, couldn't speak highly enough about the place, absolutely fabulous. But he was stung in the restaurant, and he just asked for a glass of water at the table, and they charged him $8, not for so much the water, but for the man that poured the water was $8, which to me is a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
So the trick there is to take your own empty water bottle to the bartender, and he'll do it complimentary, but you really don't want to have to tell a five-star client to take empty bottles of water with them to the bar. but the food's great, et cetera. If you've got deep pockets, And just want to have one wonderful experience, by all means go there. But if you're looking at, say, watching your money, then try and buy a prepackaged with meal plan included, et cetera, and drink moderately and then it should still come out relatively okay. But it's just the experience that you want. When you're doing the budget to go there, you just have to allow for food and beverage in the equation and then match it against perhaps another experience with another South Pacific country to see how it shapes up with that.
I know. And the five-star hotel in French Polynesia generally costs more than a five-star hotel, say, in the Cook Islands. Well, there isn't one in the Cook Islands.
Yeah. What you'll probably find is if you're looking to stay at a regular beach bungalow in French Polynesia, for the cost of the room only, no food, no drinks, no anything, just the room only price, in other South Pacific countries you will find all the meals included, and a step further in some of them, even all the alcoholic beverages included. So there's full bang for the buck. What people sometimes shy away from is the fact that they're looking at airfares first and they go, oh, goodness, French Polynesia is much cheaper by several hundred dollars than Fiji or the Cooks or Samoa and all these other countries. But it's when you get there, it's what is the total cost of the holiday, not how much was the ticket price on the pretty brochure that you picked off the shelf. What is it after you've paid all those things that you do when you're on vacation? But like I said, if it's the dream for someone, their whole life they wanted to go there, do it. But just don't, you know, do it properly. Don't shortchange yourself by, I don't want to have a glass of wine because it's expensive. Otherwise, why the heck are you going on a holiday if you can't do what you would normally do in another country or go jet skiing or whatever you wanted to do? Just go for it and be prepared. But it's beautiful place.
I know. I think Bora Bora, well, as we were talking earlier, that Bora Bora, as you leave that airport and get on your little boat to go to your hotel, it is probably one of the most spectacular sights and island sights that you can see in the world, isn't it, that you get to easily.
It takes your breath away, Gerald. It just does. It's just
it's almost worth that $1,000 a night. But it's spectacular, isn't it?
Yep.
And then it comes go ahead.
No, I was going to say, at least some people's got the whole, their whole dream is going to this place they've heard about. Well, you know, maybe do a short stay once or something like that just to experience it. Then, you know, for the longer stays, if you've got a couple of weeks off instead of 1 week, then use that for the other countries where the price tag's going to end up like almost like 2 weeks for one type of thing when you compare the two. It depends.
Well, let's take just a second to talk about the Cook Islands, because they're basically English-speaking and very different than French Polynesia. And they're very, very, like Hawaii was like in the 1950s. And go ahead.
Yeah, it's full of New Zealanders. I'm just teasing any New Zealanders that might be listening. The Australians have it with them all the time. But it is attracted to a lot of the New Zealand market. A lot of the accommodation in the Cook Islands, and I was talking to a colleague about this today, has little kitchenettes involved. And she was saying to me, why are most of the hotels in the Cook Islands with kitchenettes? And that's because the Australians and the Kiwis like that self-catering so they don't have to eat at the restaurant all the time. If someone's going to the Cooks, I often recommend that they go to Aitutaki, which is a short flight away, because the snorkeling facilities and the beaches there are quite lovely. But once you've done the circle, around the island tour and you've done your snorkeling, you kind of, after 5 days, and this is in my personal opinion, after 5 days, it's like enough. What am I going to do before I stretch my wrist?
Yeah, it's basically, I think, a stopover on the way to New Zealand or Australia or somewhere down.
Yeah, bring it to the stopover. Absolutely fantastic for a stopover. And there are a few places that are of good quality for the U.S. market where they feel very, very comfortable. But, as you said, as a stopover, rather than a one-stop destination. Or if you only had 5 nights and then that was it and that's all you had for time off, then shoot down and do it much longer and I don't think you'd be that jazzed.
Right. Well, let's go to Fiji.
Okay.
Fiji is, we can fly there nonstop from Los Angeles. And it's a very nice flight on Air Pacific.
I love it. It's a night flight, Gerald, where you get on at about 11 o'clock at night, and then you pretty much, your body says go to sleep, and you wake up at 5:30 Fiji time landing, so it's a 9-hour, 50-minute flight. The evening ones are better than the day, the old-fashioned day flights, where your body can't adjust quite so well to the time differential. It's quite easy for Fiji.
Yeah. Now, tell us about... there's probably, most people have heard about Fiji, if they know anything about it, that it used to be very famous for cannibals. Do we have any more people still there?
Yeah, it was a country where they used to invite you for lunch, and you were lunch. But there was only one white person that was killed and eaten in Fiji, despite the reputation of these savage cannibals running all over the countryside. And this was actually if I can remember rightly, his name was Thomas Baker, and he was a Methodist missionary. And he was out there trying to, with the other missionaries, convert these wild savages over into our way of thinking. And what had happened was, it was all going along very well with this chief of this tribe that he was talking to, except I don't know whether this chief had something in his hair or a comb in his hair, and Reverend Baker went to remove it to have a look at it. But in Fiji, even today, it's considered very rude to touch another person's head without permission, and so they ate him. When they put him in the pot and boiled him up, of course, these poor villagers hadn't really seen a white dude before, so they actually were trying to cook his boots, and the leather, they tried to chew it, but that was all that was left of Reverend Baker or some boots, and I think that one of his boots is still in the Suva Museum today. So not really that edible, but they've stopped eating people, you'll be happy to know. And although if someone was had an incredible curiosity about about that, because it is an interesting subject, they've actually got some an interesting small tour in Fiji at the moment, and there's some sacred caves on the mainland of Itilebu that you can go to, and this was where they will show you a cannibal oven and talk about the voodoo and the witchcraft and the legends and this type of stuff. It's awesome, mate, and it's even great by getting out there, because they it's only small groups, like 10-15 people, and then you get to, they drive you to this river up the Sengatoka River, and they put you on a billy-billy, which is a bamboo raft, which is a whole bunch of bamboo strapped together. The water is waist deep, so if you jumped in the water, it's not like you're going to have a problem here. And then the raft heads downstream, and then you've got a short walk to the cave. But even while you're walking through to the caves, they'll be pulling up bits of weeds or leaves and just explaining a bit of Fiji medicine as you get through to the caves. Then once you're inside the cave, the actual entrance is like a hole that's relatively low to the ground. You've got to crouch down a bit. Once you're inside, it's like a huge auditorium, massive, and they've got the stalactites and stalagmites, and there's this double echo, and you walk through with lanterns, and there's no bats or yucky things inside. It's very clean, and it's fresh air inside, go through there for about 20 minutes, and they show you, where this cannibal cave was and prove that it's no longer in working order and just tell you some other stories. But I tell you, when they're explaining the cannibalism stories and legends to you, when you're inside a dark cave just by candlelight, just with this backdrop of this awesome stuff, you get shivers running up and down your back.
Well, I can imagine, but it's fabulous,
too. It's all, they had about 300 people, I believe, that were living there for 3 or 4 months when they had some tribal war way back when. So you can tell, with 300 people living in there, it wasn't some tiny little hole in the side of a cliff. This is net huge. They had some deep-sea divers go out into one of the, looked like a big well kind of thing there, and they couldn't reach the bottom. So I don't know how deep it is. It's still one of the mysteries yet to be unfolded. It's a fascinating thing. Yeah, no, it's great. So if someone wanted to go and do that, it's still to be found. There was only one other story, if I may, because I know we've got a lot of subjects to cover on that one. Sure. But it was when P&O Cruise Line, this was years ago, pulled into Suva, and all the dignitaries went on board to have the captain's table. Pardon?
Cruise Line. We'll say that P&O means Pacific and Orient Cruise Line.
Correct. Pacific and Orient Cruises. And so they were invited to the captain's table. Well, the captain's talking to this dignitary from Fiji, and it's all very cordial and very stiff upper lip and very, very proper. And so, it was, of course, the ice hadn't broken at that stage, and the conversation did come up about cannibalism, and it kind of was still a touchy subject. They didn't know how to approach it, et cetera, and they were just discussing it gently. Well, anyway, one of these Fijian dignitaries This is as the waiter's going around. He has a look at the menu and closes it and looks back at the waiter and says, and now I would like to see the passenger list. Of course, everyone started laughing. He broke the ice, and then they realized they're just normal people with a sense of humor and carry on.
Oh, that's great.
It's quite cool. Yeah.
That's great.
While we're talking about food, just for a minute, because several of the Pacific Islands down there have a drink called the kava.
Can you tell us about the kava, because I know kava is very, very popular in Fiji. It is. It's actually all over in different parts of the South Pacific.
In Vanuatu,
it's too strong for me. It comes out green, and it's a man's drink only. As far as I'm concerned, I can't touch it. What yongona or kava is, it's the powdered root of the pepper plant, of a pepper plant family, I should say. And so they pull up this knobbly root and they pound the heck out of it so it just looks like sawdust.
And it looks like mud, doesn't it?
So they have this wooden bowl, which is called a tanoa bowl, and then with a big rag, they make like an oversized tea bag, put the powdered form inside and mush it, so like you would a tea bag, to extract it through into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they serve it to you, there is a particular server, and there's a Fijian man that's sitting on the other side of the bowl. They do a bit of a ceremony, which is in Fijian, and basically blessing it and welcoming people, etc., because it was a ceremonial drink. When they pass it to you, the recipient who's sitting cross-legged on the floor will look at the person handing it to him. Same bulla, which is, the hello, clap his hands once, drink it completely, scull it straight back, and then clap his hands three times and return the bowl back to the person that gave it to him. It used to be ceremonial for only dignitaries or for chiefs to talk about problems, etc., but now it's become quite a social thing. So you'll find the bowls pretty much anywhere there's a wedding or a birthday or any excuse.
I know. And many times, many of the tourists will be given the opportunity to have the kava. It's becoming very popular. Now, I want to ask a question about, I know you've been to Fiji, 100 times or more?
171 on the last count.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so you know more about Fiji than probably most people on Earth, maybe more than most Fijians. But I want to ask you a couple of questions. If you had the ideal time to go to Fiji, when would you go?
Oh, goodness.
If you had your option.
If you had the option, I would probably go between mid-April all the way through until mid-November.
Okay.
Now, the weather is changing now because it used to be, and I say the word used to lightly, and that was the wet season was supposed to be from the end of November until the end of April. But over the last 3 years, I've been there for Christmas and New Year, and it's been fabulous.
Really?
But the end of January and February has been atrocious, and then come March, it's been really good again. So the weather all over the planet is upside down at the moment.
Yeah.
Here's an example. For Christmas just gone past, in Tasmania, there was snow on Christmas Day. Now, it's supposed to be 120 in the shade there. Out of Sydney in the Blue Mountains, it was bushfire in the morning, but the afternoon snow put it out. They're going snow in December. What is it?
Wow.
So that wilt on cuckoo. It's a harder and harder question to answer accurately because of that.
Yeah.
I would say if you were going in February to take an umbrella, and it's high humidities and there could be cyclones. But the rest of the year is great. And like I said, if you went between May and the end of April, early May to mid November. June, July, August is considered winter in the tropics. So you'd find that there'd be less humidity during those months, but it can still get cooler at night. I'm in California, so what do I know about cold? But long sleeve cotton versus long sleeve cotton shirt for the guys you might need in the wintertime. And you could possibly need a light blanket on at night. But you see Fijians running around looking like they're ready for snow themselves because they hate the cold.
Right.
But that would be the only time. And if you're a scuba diver, of course, you might need to have a wetsuit on in June, July, August because the water temperatures would be quite different from other times of the year.
Well, I want to ask you some questions about different islands and different properties. Now, I've only been to Fiji about 25 or 30 times, so I don't know anything as much as you do. But my opinion is that the main island, Nangi, where you land in the international jet, and Suva at the other end of that island, in my opinion, I find to be more, I don't know quite the word, but they seem to be more touristy and...
cheesy?
and more group-oriented and more blue-collar and more busy. It's more like some of the, maybe like Waikiki Beach or some of Maui or, I mean, Cancun. It's very crowded sometimes and much more hotels. And do you find that it's a nice island for a few days, but do you think it's a place of vacation for most people?
Well, again, it depends on the market. If you're talking about the Australia and New Zealand market, they're going to head towards the Coral Coast, which is that road that along Queens Road that stretches between Nandi and, say, Pacific Harbour before you get to Suva, because you're going to find the larger, more 3.5-star hotels. The exception to the hotels along that area would be a man-made area called Denarawa, about 25 minutes out of Nandi, where you're going to find the Hilton, Sheraton, Marriott, you know, all the big American chain 5-star properties all in one little area by the marina.
It's not quite wall-to-wall hotels, but it's getting close, isn't it?
Not yet. I mean, it's starting to in general, but that's a man-made island. But the others, you've still got to drive. It's not, you know, in a lot of the other cases, after you've left general, it's not like you can walk outside from one hotel and walk down the road to the next one. You still need to get a taxi, so thank goodness for that. The other blessing, for want of a better word, is the fact that other than Nandi and Suva, no building in Fiji can be higher than the tallest palm tree. So you're not going to find the high rises at all. You're all going to be flat, but there's still a lot of land. But I've noticed over the years that what used to be just coastal view has now got the fence of another hotel or a construction going on. I think going to this area for the North American market, quite frankly, I think if they're looking at their at something exotic, you know, why go and I don't. With all due respect to the Sheratons and the Hiltons, why go spend 10 hours on a flight from LA to go to a Sheraton or a Hilton, unless it's a stopover and you're using frequent flying points, get in a small airplane, like a 17-seater Twin Otter, and go to Tavuni or Kundavu or you know, the outer island.
They're heaven, aren't they? They're 40 different world away. They're absolutely magnificent.
It is, just off of Nandi, though, itself, before you get into a plane, you can get a boat out into the Mamanutas, and where you'll find it's like an area that's dotted with islands. Now, unlike Mexico or the Caribbean or even French Polynesia, for that matter, you find in many cases you've got one island, one resort, another island, another resort. It's not like 20 resorts on one island.
Like Turtle Island and some of those.
Exactly. And they're quite pretty. Turtle Island is up in the Yasau group, which I actually prefer over the Mamanutas. I think the Mamanutas have been worked to death right now, and it's going to be more of the, you've got kids, take them to the Mamanutas, whereas the Yasau Island is mainly, it's just up a little bit more than the Mamanutas. You're going to find really only two upscale properties, Turtle, as you just mentioned, and another one called Nauvoo Two Stars, and other than that, the rest would be backpackers.
Right.
And there's a boat called the Yasawa Flyer, which every day just leaves from the mainland and just does the whole, you know, dropping people off, picking people up all the way around. And that's, you know, a good way of seeing it. Even if you're going out to a, you know, fancy schmancy hotel, it's nice to have a free sightseeing cruise to save a 4-hour transfer.
I know. But now you're talking about cruises. I know there's a whole lot. Well, not a whole lot, but there are a wide variety of tour options that you can go between islands or, like, cruise for several days. You want to talk about a couple of those, which ones you'd recommend and why?
Okay, well, if in the Yasau, it's what I've suggested for a lot of cases, seeing we were just talking about that, there is a cruise line that I like called Blue Lagoon Cruises. Now, sometimes when I mention with cruises to people, they go, I don't want to go in a big carnival.
Not in carnival,
but in the Fiji Islands, they don't want to go on a big cruise line. They'll stay home and do that to the Caribbean or Mexico. Well, the Blue Lagoon is no bigger than 34 cabins. It's like 140 feet or something like that. So imagine you're on Jackie Onassis's boat. Well, maybe not a splash, but it's still pretty nice. And they've got either 4-day, 3-night cruises or 7-night cruises all the way around the Yasawa Islands and back again. we pushed it one step forward. Once they built that resort I was telling you about, Nauru Two Stars, and we did a combination so that they spend, you know, say 4 days, 3 nights cruising up, but on the last day, instead of coming back to the mainland, they get off at a resort for a week and or 5 days or however long they've got left, and stay there where they've got white beaches and turquoise blue ocean. And just a lovely, lovely place. And then they can either catch a regular, you know, shuttle boat back to the island, back to the mainland, or they can get a helicopter, which is pretty expensive for that sector anyway, or a seaplane. So there's different ways of getting it. But that's the US hours. If you were up in the north and you still like adventure cruises, there's a cruise boat called the Tui Tai, and that's about another 144. But that's not a motor cruiser. That's under like the, think of Errol Flynn with the tall sailing ships. They, you know, that's, it's still got a price tag like the Blue Lagoon, but it's, it includes a lot. I think they have about 30 mountain bikes on board. And so you think a boat, mountain bikes, what's the story here? But it's when they come into port to get on the mountain bikes and take off and explore some of these little islands that they go to. So it's pretty cool. And they've got kayaks and things like that, but that's more focused on adventure. And younger crowds tend to be gravitating towards that. So that was it. If you were... Well, when I was just down in Fiji a few weeks ago, and I was up north on the far north of a newer level where they have the Great Sea Reef, which is the third longest barrier reef in the world. And there's only one little resort that has access to it at the moment. It's called Nukumbati, which actually means sand warrior, and there's a lot of connections with tribes and fighting and all that stuff, but that's another story. Anyway, what I was lucky to find out was not far from there, like 10 or 15 minutes by boat, there was a Fijian gentleman who has just started, harvesting his first black pearl harvest. Yeah, and it was all locally done. There is another black pearl farm on the other side of a newer level, more commercialized. Nothing wrong with that, but they've got the commercialized price tags that go with it. But this, I couldn't believe. I nearly bought. You know, I wanted to buy every black pearl that he had. I could not believe how low the prices were. But what I did like about it was the fact that any money that they make from the sale of those pearls, it goes back to the village. It goes towards the kids' education, medical, all that kind of stuff. So I love to hear that, where it's a win-win situation, because the person going out sees it in its raw natural state. There's nothing plastic about it. I mean, he had an old towel that he threw on the table and emptied the pearls, and you're sort of like giving your money and you're looking at spam and noodles or something on his shelf and all the rest of it. But you could see it was real McCoy. It wasn't like you're not paying the price tag for the hoity-toity glass and fancy velvets and all the rest of it. It's just the way it is. But it's fabulous, and it's a win-win, because you get something that's probably a tenth of the price of anywhere else on the planet, and the village benefits by the money that's been in exchange. So I love that.
We haven't talked about it at all, really. I don't think many, particularly North Americans, know too much about Fiji. They know about some of it, but they don't realize that Fiji is really quite large, isn't it? It's much larger than what we think about.
Yeah, there's about 330 islands, but I think only about 100 of those islands are actually inhabited, and there's 800,000 people in Fiji.
Yeah,
and
it covers quite an area.
It is. I would say just over half are indigenous Fijian, and then the next larger percentage would be the Fijian Indian, because they brought the Indian people out from India, of all places, to work on the plantations, and they stayed. And they're usually the ones in the shops and, money makers. And then the leftovers would be the small Chinese group, and then other countries under the miscellaneous other 3%. But it's interesting, because when you're over there, English is the language that they're teaching in the schools, and all the cities will be speaking it. If you got really remote, some of these completely out in the middle of the never-never, you may have some strife, because that will only be in the Fijian dialect of that area, but not many people go that far bush. I'm just one of these crazy, well, actually, Gerald, you would. then you've got the Hindi that's spoken, so they've got, you know, they've got the Christians, they've got the Muslims, they've got the Hindus, you know, they've just about got the whole mixed bag, but they live in harmony, which is good. Mm-hmm. There's been a bit of political strife going on in you know, the last year, but again, it was good old newspapers that kind of blew a lot of that out of proportion, and it's still, to me, the safest place to be on the planet. So it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful place. I do find it interesting when there's a Fijian that meets another Fijian, the first thing, if they just met for the first time, the first question that comes out of their mouth is, who is your father? Which I thought when I first heard it was rather an odd question. But because with a country of 800,000 people, you can bet that someone's going to be related in that group. You know, if there's three or four people, you can put money down that someone's second cousin, third, whatever. But the boys need to do that when they're courting, because they can't court the next door neighbor because it's a cousin. So when they're going up looking for a bride, they have to go to another, you know, not even another village, another island if they can.
Right.
Try and find the bride, but they still have to sit down and figure out who's cousins, who's what, where, so that there's no bloodline crossovers. It's quite interesting.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So
we don't have much more. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we don't have a lot more time, but I did want to spend some time. I mean, a lot of people go down there to go diving. We already talked about the Great Barrier Reef.
Mm-hmm.
And can you spend a little bit of time talking, number one, about the places to dive? Is there only one place you can dive, or several islands that have great diving?
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And also, in relationship to that, because a lot of the diving, some of the better diving, is where there's only, like, as you mentioned, one hotel on the island or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk something about the hotels and mention maybe, I mean, Fiji has a wide variety of 5 and 6 star hotels down there. Some of them are very, very, very world class. And I know some of our listeners are interested in that. Would you mention maybe the top 3 and why you mentioned that, and along with the diving? Because I know some of them are located out near diving.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll summarize it fairly quickly. And with the last one I spoke to was just talking about seeing we're still up in the far north in my head at the moment. Nukumbati Island Resort is the only resort that's accessible to the Great Sea Reef, like I said, the third longest barrier reef in the world. And
about how much did that cost to stay there?
To stay there, it's a 5-star with all the meals, all the alcohol. You're looking at from $680 a night plus tax with everything included. Paper diving. It's like,
okay.
I think all over Fiji, it's pretty much about $90 or more for a 2-tank dive. That's pretty standard, and I'm talking in US dollars now.
All right.
But as far as for that particular one, there's, with only 7 bungalows on a 45-acre island, then you've got the third largest barrier reef sitting right out in your front doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
It's just awesome. You can actually go on an exploratory dive and name your own dive site.
Really?
It's pretty cool. They've got the naming rights. They'll log it on the map, longitude, latitude, and then if you went back in next year or 10 years' time, it'll be Jerry's dive site or whatever you called it, or Chris's, you know, fantasy or what. So people get a buzz out of that, and they come back and just see what coral's grown around it, etc.
Oh,
when I was there in January, that's the first time ever that they were coming back from a dive, and they looked alongside the boat was a whale shark, which has never been in Fiji waters before, ever.
Mm.
So I don't know if it's lost or what, because, you know, they're normally, what, off of Ningaloo, off of Western Australia, or in the Indian Ocean, but this one, you know, had a bad GPS or something, or it's global warming, I don't know what it is, but for a whale shark, and they jumped in the water with it, and there were mantas and green turtles. It's such a very, very healthy reef. Because there's not 20 resorts and dive boats and day trippers and everything else
mm-hmm.
churning up the area. It's like diving
mm-hmm.
into virgin land. So that's the one in the far north. If you go to still while we're up in north, but if we go over to the east part of it, there's another island called Teviuni. The
mm-hmm.
section of water between Vanua level and Teviuni is called the Somosomo Straits. I often suggest the advanced, divers with a bit of experience go there, because if you just got certified and you're a bit of a rookie at it and not the strongest swimmer, there's some heavy-duty drift diving in that area.
Oh.
And so I don't want somebody, you know, getting into difficulties because they're not used to drift diving, or they might
right.
be a wussy swimmer like I am. So, but it's very pretty there. If you follow the circle on VT level, just say where the super side of it is, but just, you know, if you go around the corner, it's an island called Benga, and it's spelled B-E-Q-A. This is the island where actually the firewalkers come from. They walk over the hot burning fire, white coals with their bare feet. But there's some pretty diving in that area too of the soft corals. Very, very beautiful.
And
the other one
was down there.
You've got a lot of choices for being, Summer Straits. You've got probably 30, 40 hotels to choose from. So you can probably go from, 120 a night to 1,000 a night. So you've got a lot of more variety because there's more properties. But bearing in mind, there's going to be more dive boats in the water. Do you know what I'm getting at? So the higher the price tag, the more exclusive it is. In Benga, there's a few places, but you don't have to be on Benga Island, although there are a few resorts there. You can still be on the mainland and just go out by boat because it's so close. You can see Benga Island from the mainland, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's really cool for the coral. The other place would be in the southern part of Fiji. There's an island called Kandavu, and that's spelled Kadavu. And in Kandavu, accessibility is tricky because there's not a lot of roads all over the place. Most of the resorts get to each other by boat. So you get off at Kandavu Airport, which is like a tin shed, get taken by boat to the resort. There's also one little resort there that specializes for surfing because there is some surf down there. But the dive resorts, the place that I would suggest, let me think, would be probably a place called Koromakawa, because that's the closest place I could think of that's near the Astrolabe Reef, A-S-T-R-O-L-A-B-E, which is famous for divers doing the South Pacific diving. And you're looking at a villa with all your meals included for $400 a night.
Really?
And and that's gourmet food too. It's lovely. I was there in January. I really enjoyed that because that was, besides being right by the Astrolabe Reef, in this little bay area that's by, and I'm waving my hands in the air like you can see what I'm pointing to. There's a, like a backyard of this beautiful bay inlet, minimum of 3 mantas up to 15, 20 manta rays swimming around in the water, just like a playground. It seems to be their hangout area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, for divers and there's hiking, et cetera, but if someone wants a discotheque in Kandavu, not going to happen. If they want to go to a big party at night, not going to happen. It's like if you want to go on hikes or if you want mainly for scuba divers, I must admit, for Kandavu, they might disagree, but that seems to be the trend at the moment, then they're very happy going there. And if they've done that during the day, usually by night after a beautiful meal, you're pretty much pooped and want to have an early night anyway.
Yeah. Well, my word, we've talked a lot about a magnificent island group and remember, this is Lynette Wilson of Destination World, and go to her website for more information and give her a call. And Lynette, we can't thank you enough.
Thank you again for inviting me. I hope it has helped people make their mind up where they want to go in the South Pacific.
That was great, Lynette.
We'll have to have you back, and we'll talk about other islands like Papua New Guinea and some of these islands, too.
Oh, that would be great. Whenever you want me back, I'd love to be there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again so very, very much.
Thanks, gentlemen. Until next time.
Yeah, thank you. I learned so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. Bye now. Bye.
Okay. Sure. Yes.
Next week we have Buddy Bombard.
Yeah, Buddy Bombard. Yeah, from Buddy Bombard Europe, Hot Air Ballooning. And he's a great guest. And he'll be calling in from France, actually. And yeah, we're really looking forward to that show. That sounds great. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. Lynette was great. Gosh, we had some great stories and wonderful insight there. So that was wonderful. So.
Yes. Well, we'll have her back and talk about more of the South Pacific because she knows a tremendous amount about it and can really help our research. Well,
yes.
Until next week.
Okay, Jerry.
See you then.
Yeah. Till next week. Okay. Talk to you later. Okay.
All righty. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.